Perspective with Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I am Jesse Zurawell, and my guest today is Alex Craner. Alex is a former hedge fund manager. He's worked as a market analyst and has traded financial and commodity derivatives for over 20 years. He is the creator of the iSystem and founder of iSystem Trend Following. In addition to that, he is the author of three books, Alex Craner's Trend Following Bible, Mastering Uncertainty, and most recently, Grand Deception. It's always my pleasure to speak with Alex. So without further ado, Alex, welcome back to Perspective.
Hi, Jesse. Good to be with you again. Thank you.
Absolutely. So I want to start with our good friend, Western Empire, and ask you for your thoughts on the Fed chairs, the U.S. Fed chairs' recent statements regarding higher interest rates and what seems to me to be an inevitable recession quite soon. Jerome Powell appeared before Congress and then had a pretty lengthy press conference in which he seemed quite shaken up by what's happening and what's to come. And he talked about a soft landing with regard to raising interest rates and then bringing them back down and somehow circumventing a recession in the process. But it all seems like a lot of, I don't want to say prevaricating, but it borders on prevaricating. It's definitely not truthful, and it's definitely not telling Americans the whole picture. But what are your thoughts on his recent statements and the economic situation of the U.S. overall at this point?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question. And I have to say, I'm having second thoughts about it because I, for many months now, I've been kind of outspoken about my conviction that Fed would not be able to walk their hawkish talk. Namely, you know, they have painted themselves into a corner. They have been engaged since 2000 in greater and greater amounts. This quantitative easing has been also fueling the equities bubble and the bonds bubble. Mm-hmm. And that has been also helped by low interest rates. And basically that is all inevitably leading us into a future of high inflation and stagnation. In other words, stagflation. And mm-hmm. I thought that this was an inevitable future, okay? Because you have now the situation in the United States and much of the Western world where you have about 20% of all the listed corporations on the New York Stock Exchange are zombies, meaning that they cannot finance their they cannot fund their debt servicing, even the interest rate, from their free cash flow. Mm-hmm. Right, so they are, if it wasn't for government subsidies in the form of Fed's purchases of corporate bonds indirectly, because they're not allowed to do it directly, but you know, like you buy ETFs, you give money to major broker dealers who then bid up your bonds, and in this way you fund these corporations, you know, like GE, for example, or other such zombies. And mm-hmm. so basically what happens is that if you start raising interest rates, you're going to push all of these corporations deep underwater. Their bad debt is on the books of many, many banks. So raising interest rates and, let's say, normalizing the Federal Reserve balance sheet would lead to economic collapse and to a deflationary depression. So I was convinced that there was no way on earth that they could do this, that all they're doing is jawboning. They're using their quote-unquote moral suasion tools to mm-hmm. convince the markets that they're going to tackle inflation, that they're going to make sure that inflation is contained, that eventually they're going to raise interest rates. But, you know, like with interest rates at 8.6%, you would have to raise interest rates to at least that much, close to that level, and reverse QE to actually mm-hmm. bring the inflation down. And that seems that would be catastrophic for the U.S. economy. It would create almost instantly mass bankruptcies among companies, but also the people, you know, many of whom are now living on credit card borrowing. It would lead to social uprisings. And, you know, it comes to the point where, you know, the people in charge would find themselves in a mess that they couldn't control and that they couldn't predict the outcome of. So mm-hmm. anyway, for many months, I was convinced that all they're going to do is talk. They're never going to do good on that. Here's the reason why I'm having second thoughts about this now, is because in addition to the big economic crisis at home, the United States is the major exponent of the Western Empire, right? And the Western mm-hmm. Empire is getting its butt kicked in Ukraine, and they're risking losing their grand prize, which is their control of the Eurasian landmass. Mm-hmm. So, you know, their choice between collapsing the economy and collapsing the currency, because if you keep on doing the quantitative easing and you keep on keeping the interest rates very, very low, then you get what Japan is getting now, that your currency starts to collapse. And if right. the US dollar as a currency begins to collapse and you get hyperinflation, then, you know, the empire no longer has a card to play with their, you know, with their shrinking ranks of allies that they can count on to project power, you know, like, you know, countries like Singapore, Saudi Arabia, they're all already having second thoughts. They're all, you know, through the back channels talking to Russia, to China, to Iran. They're looking at this Eurasian integration, and they're, you know, like their loyalties to the empire are shrinking, they're lessening, and the empire's ability to enforce compliance and obedience is also declining. So it is entire, and then, you know, not to mention the element that as the dollar and euro prices of major commodities like oil and gas and wheat and corn and so forth are rising, as they have been rising, the major beneficiary of that is their chief rival, which is Russia, right? So mm-hmm. by continuing with the inflationary policies, they are weakening their hand and they're strengthening Russia's hand massively. So for that reason, I'm wondering if the Fed, and you know, like the Fed is owned by the banking establishment, which is the biggest loser if their empire collapses, right? So the right. preservation of the empire is an extremely important imperative for them. So I'm wondering if they're not going to go through with it, accept the pain of a deflationary depression, accept the, you know, the unemployment and the economic crisis. Somehow they're going to work out how to bail out the corporations that are, you know, important to them. And then mm-hmm. I suspect that they're going to come up with another pandemic and institute more lockdowns to kind of preempt the social uprisings, you know, so they're going to say like, oop, guess what? There's a terrible virus. So don't go out, don't go anywhere, stay locked in your home. And that way people don't spill out in the streets. And then, you know, for as far as employment problems are going to go, I suspect that maybe the U.S. military is going to have plenty of employment opportunities in the future wars that they're planning against Russia and China.
That's a good point. And that's a prediction that I think has a very good chance of becoming reality. And I was struck by,
you know, I just wrote this in my, I published a daily Trend Compass report. So I just published this scenario, I think not this morning, but yesterday, but then just today, maybe minutes before we connected for this chat, I saw a presser by Joe Biden. And I didn't catch where this was, but somebody was asking him like, why do they need the money for these more vaccines or whatever? And Joe Biden let slip out that like, we need more money because there's going to be another pandemic. So it looks like they are planning another pandemic, you know, probably what, maybe September, October, November, who knows, but you know, there, if, you know, Joe Biden said it, I'm supposing that he's, you know, partly awake during their, you know, cabinet meetings and what they discuss. So, you know, being, you know, mentally incontinent, he slipped it out. But I think that's an important point. And I think that's, and you know, like I've also heard a number of European leaders, you know, they didn't say that we're going to have a new pandemic, but they keep insisting that the pandemic is not over. And then maybe we need to consider masking in permanence between, you know, the Germans want to mask in permanence between, October and Easter, you know, every year as a matter of rule. So, you know, they're definitely not letting go of their, you know, pandemics, because then that gives them emergency powers as well.
Right. And we had monkeypox trotted out recently. Didn't seem to take hold, but it's still floating around out there, more so as a narrative than as a pathogen. And in the UK recently, in the past few days, it was announced that polio, derived from an oral vaccine from polio, a strain of polio was found in London's sewage. This was reported. I haven't seen any evidence to confirm it. But all of that to say that the narrative and fear of virus is still, virus with a capital V, is still very much being weaponized and at the very least kept in the background if needed for future use. And I think, as you just said, it's going to be needed.
Yeah, and I suspect that we're looking at more than just a narrative with regards to monkeypox, because if you recall, a few weeks ago, Bill Gates was doing the rounds about his new germ teams, you know, the new, you know, like in anticipation of this new pandemic treaty that the governments were being asked to sign or what have you. And, you know, Bill Gates was going around making interviews and presentation. And on several occasions, he made a point that it will be very important for these germ teams and the administrations that run them to practice, you know, like we have to practice. So, you know, like I suspect that they're going to be doing these minor outbreaks as a way of, you know, tightening up the crews to know how to respond effectively for the time when they announce the big one, you know, so that the people are trained, that they know what to do, what not to do, how to communicate with the public and all that. So I think that monkeypox was that, I'm pretty sure, because, you know, in certain countries, even though the supposed case count was really low, they made a whole thing of it. And then they started, you know, promoting measures and, you know, it really couldn't be explained as a public health concern. I think that we're just practicing.
I think that's a very good point. And I certainly don't mean to dismiss it as totally narrative. I think what I meant to say is that it was trotted out. It's still out there. There were measures put in place, quarantine measures put in place in the Netherlands, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So quite a long quarantine compared to COVID-19, if I'm not mistaken on that as well. In addition, there was talk of vaccines, using the smallpox vaccine to combat monkeypox, and Bavarian Nordic, which is a pharmaceutical, quite a large pharmaceutical enterprise, has already made a substantial amount of money selling its smallpox vaccine on the international market to ostensibly combat monkeypox. So certainly moves have been made with regard to social control measures and with regard to companies, or at least a company, making money off of its quote unquote vaccine. And in addition to that, it's seeded in people's minds, or kept alive in people's minds, the narrative. This is where the narrative comes in, the narrative and the fear of another so-called pandemic. So it's certainly something real in the sense of the response that has been manifested to it by authorities. But as for the actual threat of it, I believe that it's fully narrative. I've yet to see a person shown in any media who has monkeypox. They're using the PCR test to detect monkeypox once again, which is not a diagnostic tool. We know this from the past 2+ years, but I've seen online people snapping back into that mode of utter fear and willingness to do anything to seemingly protect themselves, even though they're not. I've seen pictures of people with 2 masks on, a face shield, and glasses, even though they don't wear glasses, so non-prescription glasses, thinking that this is going to protect them from monkeypox or some other pathogen that's out there. So I was talking about this earlier this week with a guest, that not only is the physical, the technological infrastructure in place from the past 2+ years, but the psychological infrastructure is very much in place as well. And they're both primed to be reactivated again when necessary. And I think, as we just talked about, in the US, that is very likely to happen in the fall, especially given what Powell is almost forced to concede at this point. And what's amazing too is that if you read the Wall Street Journal on this, it says, quote, "Rising fuel costs and supply chain disruptions from Russia's war against Ukraine have sent prices up in recent months. Those pressures have added to already high inflation as demand surged last year from the reopening of the economy and aggressive government stimulus," unquote. So embedded in that is this idea that rising costs are causing inflation rather than the rising costs being the result of inflation and insane, unfettered money printing. And in addition to that, Powell, in his one of his press conferences, I believe he had multiple, but it may have been just one, he said, and I almost laughed at this, but had to stop because I know what it bodes for the future. He said, quote, clearly, today's 75 basis point increase is an unusually large one, and I do not expect moves of this size to be common. From the perspective of today, either a 50 or 75 basis point increase seems most likely at our next meeting. So contradicting himself in a matter of two sentences there with regard to interest rate hikes.
Yeah.
So this, whether this is performative on his part, which I don't think it is, or genuine, it seems like they have to admit that something is very wrong and is going to get worse, but they're trying to put rose-colored glasses, look at it through rose-colored glasses as much as possible.
Yeah, or as other people like to say, they're putting lipstick on a pig.
Right, right. And I wonder constantly how much of this is planned and how much of it is serendipitous. And maybe we can get into that after the short break we have to take right now, but it's a question well worth asking, especially given what we've seen over the past 2+ years. So I'll be right back here on TNT Radio with Alex Craner after this.
Pervoy Morich on TNT Radio.
But that's crazy that, like, I can't believe I got this email literally, like, from my hosting service saying they're going to jack it up 10% because of the EU, because of, you know, the whole war in Ukraine and all of this. And what are your thoughts on all of this crazy energy stuff?
Well, I mean, this is a self-induced catastrophe. Biden just canceled leases on the drilling leases on the federal land that he could have renewed. He chose not to. He could unilaterally change the laws in California that have to do with the trucking industry. There are insane laws that say that any truck that's made before 2010 that's gas combustion cannot service the ports in Los Angeles and Long Beach. Everything has to be either a newer truck or they have to be electric trucks, which don't even exist at this current point.
Pervoy Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Think tsunamis only happen somewhere else? Think again. Tsunamis happen when ocean water is displaced by an earthquake or other large undersea disturbance. Plan to act. If you are near the coast and feel a quake, hear the ocean roar, or see the water recede significantly, a tsunami may be approaching. Get moving. Go inland and up to safety. For more information, visit tsunami.gov.
For sale. One deep fat fryer, one industrial fridge freezer, one set of knives, cleaver missing, several hundred plastic forks, one dishwasher, mid-30s, has own teeth, all is new, one careless owner.
Poor hygiene is bad for your business. Fortunately, the Food Standards Agency has a range of tools that can help you manage food hygiene and keep your customers. Visit food.gov.uk/goodbusiness.
Mainstream media censors, smears, and intimidates those telling the truth. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Perspective. I am Jesse Zerwell, and I'm speaking with Alex Craner. You can find Alex at his website, which is thenakedhedgie.com. He has a lot of excellent written material that he's published there to do with finance, to do with geopolitics. He's a very astute geopolitical analyst in addition to a financial analyst. And you can find him on Twitter as well at Naked Hedgie. So do follow his work. It's well worth it. Alex, before the break, I asked you, or I put out there, this question I'm constantly asking, as I'm sure you are, and a lot of people who are paying attention are, how much of this economic destruction that we're seeing, not just in the US, but in the UK and the EU, is planned? And one has to ask that not solely because of how the forecasts with regard to inflation are communicated to us in a very mealy-mouthed way, but also because of what we're seeing with regard to the wanton destruction of food supplies and these seemingly, or not even seemingly, very arbitrary rules that are being rolled out for, that are mandating farmers here in the US, for example, destroy their crops to receive a payment from the government. If they don't destroy their crops, they won't receive funding anymore from the government to produce crops, to bring their yields to market. I saw this in a TikTok compilation that was played at the beginning of the most recent Corona Investigative Committee, which Reiner Fuelmich is heading. This oil tanker driver in the US had been instructed to drive along a lease road, I think it was, and to quite literally dump the fuel from his tanker. He was being paid to do this, instructed and paid to do this by the government. This makes no sense unless you say that this is being done intentionally. But what is your take on that?
Well, I believe that it is being planned this way. You know, build back better has the word back in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is there because they have planned a controlled demolition of the economy. They want to push forward this fourth industrial revolution. They want to completely change the basis of the economy in the society. They want to eliminate small and medium-sized businesses. They want to concentrate production and distribution of goods and services through large corporations, because, you know, it's relatively easy to control an economic system if you have just like a small number, a handful of very large corporations that do everything, and you know you can influence them because there's just like a handful of people on top of them. You know, like you have five major banks in the country, that's much easier for the ruling establishment than to have 50,000 small regional community banks that are managed by people who, you know, won't necessarily respond to government dictate if it's illegal, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the part of the response to the pandemic that we had with the CARES Act predictably eviscerated the small and medium-sized businesses in the United States as well as in Europe. Mm-hmm. And greatly enriched the big corporations, like, you know, Coca-Cola Company, Amazon, small family-owned restaurants went bust, but restaurants like Pizza Hut and McDonald's remained open and did very brisk business over that time. Mm-hmm. And so this is being done on purpose. But the problem is that, you know, like a lot of their best laid plans don't work out quite as they expect them to. You know, they think that they're a lot more clever than they really are. And one right. part of their plan was, you know, let's goad Russia into a war in Ukraine, and then we're going to slam them with these extremely draconian sanctions, And then, you know, Russia's economy and the ruble are going to collapse. And then people in Russia are going to rise up and overthrow Putin. And there we solved that problem, except it didn't work out that way at all. And so, you know, I think that they're hitting a lot of headwinds with all of their agenda. And I think that, you know, there are all kinds of really systemic problems to it. Namely, you know, like when you do nefarious stuff, you can't rely on the best leadership that you can have. You know, you have to rely on low caliber, impressionable, malleable people or highly compromised people. And these people have a very difficult task to, you know, to get their dependence, their subordinates to follow their lead, mm-hmm. to follow their orders. Because, you know, like when orders don't make sense, competent, confident people, you know, they stop and they say like, well, that's not right. You know, we shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
And so, you know, that's like at some point, the whole edifice, it turns into like a house of cards, into wet noodle, and it's not going the way they planned it anymore. And, you know, when you look at the statements by Bill Gates, CEO of Moderna, CEO of Pfizer, it is very clear that they're deeply disappointed with how their pandemic game has gone around the first time. You know, mm-hmm. I doubt that it's going to go better the next time, because, you know, the first time people were a lot more credulous and they really thought that this thing was for real. I think that this time a lot of people are going to say like, wait a minute, you're having a laugh again, right? You're trying to, you know, what's really going on, you know? So right. I don't know how it's going to work out, but I don't think it's going to work out too well for them. And, you know, we're coming to a point where outcomes are anybody's guess. You know, you can't really predict what's going to happen. And I think that makes them extremely nervous. It makes them extremely defensive, and it makes them react with ever more reckless gambling. You know, like it's kind of like geopolitics and politics meets the gambler's ruin, you know, like when you can't accept a loss and then you're just doubling down and doubling down and doubling down until you completely ruin yourself. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen, but it's definitely interesting.
Yes, interesting to say the least. My question about all of that, I have many questions, but one that keeps arising for me is, surely the planners of the response we're seeing now from Western Empire must have known that things would work out the way they're working out now, in that their so-called sanctions against Russia would end up benefiting Russia. I'm not saying that nobody in Russia is being hurt by the sanctions, but we can see how the ruble's performing. We can see the massive oil sales Russia is making to China. In fact, China just surpassed Saudi Arabia as the primary purchaser of Russian oil. We can see things working out very nicely for Russia. Now, whether or not Russia knew that this was coming and made plans for it, I think that's a question, at least, that we need to ask. But with regard to Western Empire, I find it hard to believe that nobody saw this coming, that they are that stupid, but maybe they are.
No, I'm convinced that they are stupid, because I've been observing this happening for many, many years. You know, like I'm from Croatia, which was part of former Yugoslavia, and we had a war in the early 1990s, and I served as a soldier in that war. And, you know, ever since, you know, that kind of marked me in the way that I understood that I cannot believe anything that I read in the news or see on TV. That, mm-hmm. you know, there are always these major power plays that are not explained or disclosed to the public, but they're nevertheless what is moving the events on the ground. And then you kind of have to try to figure out what's really going on and then interpret events in accordance to, you know, patterns of historical developments as you can best understand it. And I think that the best way to understand it is exactly what George Soros said in the last Davos meeting a few weeks ago, when he said that what's going on is the clash between two models of governance. And George Soros described them as the open societies, which is us, the good guys, you know, versus mm-hmm. closed societies, which are, you know, tyrannies like Russia and China and so forth. But I agree that this absolutely is the clash between two systems of governance. What we have actually is what I would call one belt, one road model mm-hmm. versus one bank, one matrix model. And, you know, the one belt, one road is what China has been developing since, I think, 2013, 2014, which is, you know, investment of resources into physical development, into physical infrastructure, building bridges, connections, investing into trade and exchange, you know, basically to ultimately everybody's benefit. The other model is what we have coming from the West, from the, you know, from the Davos crowd, from the World Health Organizations. And this is clearly very antithetical to human liberties and to human prosperities. You know, it's the empire that like sees everybody as a cheap labor force that needs to be maximally obedient and predictable, and sees the whole earth as a store of resources for them to extract to their own benefit. And so mm-hmm. that's what we have. And I think that the, you know, whatever they planned in this respect is clearly failing. And I think that they are that stupid because they choose to see things as they wish, not as they are, you know. And, you know, they attacked Russia in the way that they did because they convinced themselves that Russia is weak, that it's a, you know, a gas station with rockets, that it's a new, you know, new Volta with an army and whatever, you know, ways that they had to belittle and underestimate Russia. And they convinced themselves that this was how it was, so that, you know, like when they slap Russia with their sanctions, that Russia is going to just collapse like this house of cards. But, you know, Russia is Russia is the most important commodities producer in the world. And commodities mm-hmm. are the real stuff. You know, you cannot print them on central bank printing press. You have to buy them.
Right.
And so I think, yeah, going back, it's a long answer, I know, but yeah, they are really stupid because they've been doing stupid stuff for a very long time, which is why they are in this pickle now that they are. You know, like it took great many years to bring themselves into such a weak and desperate position that they are now losing on the Eurasian continent, losing to Russia. They're losing technological edge to China. They are forced to, in desperation, to attack their own population and to turn us into nothing but a flock of timid, obedient animals, you know, like the workforce. Mm-hmm. And so at every point, they're finding friction and opposition, and it's not going well for them.
Right. It's certainly not. My skepticism with regard to Russia and China is stoked by how well this antagonism from Western Empire has worked out for both of them. And this trend I've noticed in alternative media, especially among journalists who are covering the war in Ukraine, to completely throw themselves into this idea that Russia can do no wrong and the multipolar new world order that it has proposed along with China is going to save us from Western hegemony. I'm not opposed to that happening, but it seems like an ideal to me, and it seems like a lot of trust by a lot of people who were otherwise starting to question things or had been questioning things for the past 2+ years are now convinced that this multipolar new world order led by Russia and China, this fair world order, as Lavrov has put it, is going to change things. But it could be, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but it could be a transfer of hegemony from West to East, and just the transfer of power from one debt-based empire to another debt-based empire that has its own plans for the pursuit of digital currencies, for example, or a permanent track and trace infrastructure. China in Shanghai recently built 9,000 permanent testing stations for COVID-19 and has plans to build tens of thousands more throughout the country. And these are permanent. So what does that say? We can speculate. We can't say for sure. But I think there's a lot to question, and I've seen it. I've seen journalists once again throwing themselves completely into Russia's hands to the point where they're now sharing content from social media channels that are called the Anti-Ukraine Network, for example, and it's filled with essentially war porn glorifying Russia's military actions in Ukraine and hewing very much to this false dichotomy that my colleague George Eliason, who lives and works in Donbass, has said is a false dichotomy between the west of Ukraine and the east of Ukraine. This idea that essentially anybody who lives west of the Dnipro River is a Nazi, anybody who lives to the east of it tends to be more pro-Russia, and in Donbass especially, people are pro-Russia. But it's more complicated than that. And all of that to say that I think we should ask questions about how things are working out and not just trust that benevolence is the order of the day for Russia and China and their partners. We need to throw it to a quick break, but I'd like to get your response to that, because I think it's an important question based in skepticism that we should be asking. So I'll be right back with Alex Craner after this.
It has come to this. Heatwave lockdowns are now a thing.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Marano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Marano.
Due to a heat wave, regions in France are now banning outdoor gatherings and concerts until officials declare the heat wave over. You thought the COVID lockdowns were an anomaly? Welcome to the heat wave lockdowns. Officials in France banned people from attending concerts, gatherings, and events due to the safety concerns over the heat wave. You are no longer allowed to make this decision for yourself. Unelected government bureaucrats now determine what you can and can't do outside in the summer. In one of the biggest ironies, the annual resistance celebrations are now banned until officials declare the heat wave over. Expect a cold wave lockdown next, and climate lockdowns are already on the horizon. The wacky world in which we live. For the Marano Minute, this is Mark Marano on TNT Radio.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Controversy has dogged Black Lives Matter finances, Patrice Cullors, and other board members. Fiscal 2020 tax filings of the Black Lives Matter Foundation's finances show that expenses of $2,167,894 went to the Bowers Consulting Firm, which is owned by current board member Shalemiah Bowers. Los Angeles-based Trap Heels LLC, owned by Damon Turner, received $969,459 for live production, design, and media. Turner, a rapper and artist, is the father of Cullors' son. The BLM Foundation also paid $840,993 to Cullors Protection LLC, a company owned by Patrice Cullors' brother, Paul, and established in July 2020. In an interview to MSNBC to clear her name, Cullors said that BLM was unprepared for the rush of donations and complained that her mistakes were being weaponized against her. According to the tax filings, the Black Lives Matter Foundation still has more than $50 million in donations, and $32 million of that was invested in the stock market.
For the news and talk you can't hear anywhere else.
It gives you some awareness of what's really going on.
Where things are at, even around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Perspective. I am Jesse Zerwell, and I am speaking with Alex Craner. Alex, I laid that skepticism out before the break, and I just want to add one more thing to it, that it seems that Russia is very much on board with the WHO's agenda, especially when it comes to the WHO's One Health, basically global health governance program, which has not gotten a lot of attention, although 21st Century Wire has started to give it due attention for what it bodes for a globalist health infrastructure. But I want to get your response to my skepticism. What's your perspective on all of that?
Well, first of all, I would completely agree with you that we shouldn't be lulled to sleep in some kind of, complacent belief that this Eurasian integration is all, benevolence and kindliness from coming from Russia and China. Because at any rate, whoever is running the show, whoever has the initiative, the cost of liberty is eternal vigilance. So I think that we should always, always embrace and cultivate this internal vigilance, towards our own governments, towards foreign governments, always and in every case. We should seek to be well-informed. We should seek the truth. We should try to find best possible interpretations of what's going on. And, try to protect ourselves by being alert and well-informed. Having said all that, as I mentioned before, there are these games, these conflicts that are playing out in the world, and they're playing out well above our heads. We don't necessarily know exactly what's going on. We can connect dots and try to interpret them, but I have been convinced for a very long time that the Chinese are using their population to prepare for the inevitable conflict with the West, primarily the United States, but, you know, basically U.S. and NATO and this other system of governance, which has infiltrated mm-hmm. the centers of power in the West. And the Chinese are doing with this zero pandemic policy would seem, you would have to believe that they're stupid. And I don't believe that they are stupid. They're, you know, like at that level, a country of 1.4 billion people, it can't be that everybody's an idiot and that they believe that they can actually eliminate a virus, which is also not a very, very dangerous virus. Why would you be doing all this? Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a clear geopolitical power play dimension to the whole thing. I don't understand what it is, but for example, I understood the Russian game a bit better with a bit more clarity, and I'll try to explain that.
Sure.
Because when the pandemic started, Russia played along, like pretty much all other countries. They were doing pretty much exactly as all the other countries. You know, the lockdowns, the masks, the testing, the vaccines, and so forth. Everything. And I thought that was really weird because Belarus didn't do any of that, and mm-hmm. their neighbors, and they exchange intelligence and they talk. They have very close relationships. And so I thought, what is this all about? Why are the Russians going along with this thing, which, you know, was very, very dubious from the start? And I suspected that there must have been some kind of a good reason. And then that was confirmed to me when Russia became the first country to launch a vaccine against COVID-19. And I thought, that's interesting because, you know, they came from way behind and then they were first with the vaccine out. Now, here's how that's a geopolitical play, because this one bank, one matrix model of governance that is being promulgated by George Soros, the Davos set, World Health Organization, and all these people, you know, their agenda was to unleash this pandemic, to come out with several vaccines and to have monopoly on these vaccines. The mm-hmm. vaccines obviously didn't serve much of a purpose other than getting people to accept the digital vaccine passes. And these digital vaccine passes were meant to evolve into like a digital ID that would ultimately double up as your pretty much link to the matrix, where you would, you know, like they would be able, you know, like when they ushered their programmable digital currencies, then, you know, they could control you by, you know, having very high resolution insight into all of your buying habits, into where you go, when you go, how long you stay, right. What you buy, how much of it you buy, how often. They could, you know, they could condition your freedom on your compliance, and they could say like, hey, you know, like you didn't get your fifth booster. Guess what? You know, you're going to have to get that before we unblock your bank account. Or your internet access or your electricity or water, whatever, you know, like they would have total and complete control. And since they were doing this, they were planning to do this worldwide, because if you recall at the beginning, Bill Gates was saying, life is not getting back to normal until we have fully vaccinated 7 billion people in this world, which pretty mm-hmm. much meant that he meant everybody. So they were mm-hmm. planning on having monopoly on these vaccines. And by extension, they were planning to have a monopoly on these digital freedom passes, right? So right. They would control the database that would dole out just the right amount of freedom to you so that you're a productive member of the society to their best benefit, but that they can instantly sanction you if you step out of line even a little bit. So that was their plan. And the plan was very much dependent on them having the monopoly on the vaccines. Okay. So when the Russians came out with the vaccine as
the first
one. Let me
just say we have about 30 seconds left.
All right. Basically, Russians threw a big spanner into their vaccine and digital passes agenda by that move. Mm-hmm. And this was confirmed to me later when I watched an interview with a Russian general who said, like, oh, the pandemic, yeah, we totally see that as a geopolitical play, not as a public health concern. He said that I saw this video on the Russian TV. So that's where I'll end it for now.
Okay. Well, I very much appreciate you saying that skepticism, eternal vigilance is the order of the day. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I very much appreciate you taking the time to speak with me once again. It's always a pleasure. It's always enlightening, stimulating. And I look forward to speaking soon. Thank you very much, Alex Craner.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Take care.